Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. And I am your host, John Hansen, and I just got back from the 2019 Mr. Olympia in Las Vegas. So I'm going to talk about that in a second. But on today's show, we have an interview with Jim Seitzer, and I did this interview a few weeks ago, and Jim was one of the top amateur bodybuilders in the United States in the 1980s. I think he also competed up until the 1990s. Jim was always competing in the short class, and he took second to Ron Tufel at the 1979 Mr. America that was in Atlanta, Georgia. I believe Jim also won the junior Mr. USA overall. So we got a really good interview coming up with Jim Seitzer in a minute. And before we get to that, I do want to mention our sponsor, Old School Labs. I have been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. It's the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe in 2012. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner, Vintage Burn, which is the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, which is their two-stage pre-workout, or Vintage Brawn, which is the triple protein isolate powerhouse. It's packed with eggs, milk, and beef protein. Their products have no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. Old School Labs is also the home of 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banut and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you will get 12% off your order at oldschoollabs.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. And speaking of Old School Labs, the winner of the men's physique contest this weekend in the Olympia, the men's physique Olympia, I guess he is a big user of Vintage Blast, the two-stage pre-workout. Just wanted to let you guys know that. All right. Yeah, what a busy weekend. I just flew in today from Las Vegas back home. And I guess we'll talk about the Mr. Olympia in a second. I got some good news. I was able to hook up finally with Barry DeMay. I've been trying to talk to Barry for probably a year or two to get him on the show. He wanted to make sure his new nutrition company, it's an online nutrition company, it's called DeMay 88. So he wanted to make sure that is up and running and that's going good. We were able to sit down in the hotel room and do an interview with Barry. So that will be a video interview, and I also, of course, put it on the podcast, but it was like a really good two-hour interview. We talked about his whole career, about his training, his nutrition, everything. So I think you guys are really going to love it. Barry, of course, was one of the top bodybuilders in the 1980s, always placing high in the Mr. Olympia, and then his best placing was third place at the 1988 Mr. Olympia. Really great guy. Looks fantastic. Still a real big guy, very vascular, in great shape. I think he's a year older than me. I think Barry's like 57. So good for him. He looks fantastic. I got also a chance to hook up this weekend with Samir Banut, and I hung out with him all weekend. And we did a wrap-up video of the Mr. Olympia. I think we were the first one to get it up for Old School Labs. So if you want to check that out, you could go to the YouTube page for Old School Labs, and they have that up there. So that was fun hanging out with Samir, and we got to see the show. And it was a really, really exciting show. Let's talk about that for a minute. In the Mr. Olympia, of course, they had a brand new Mr. Olympia crowned because Sean Roden was not able to compete in the contest because he had those rape allegations against him about a month and a half ago. So AMI was not allowing him to compete. Sean was at the show, though. He was hanging out at the prejudging, looking pretty big. So I guess the rumor is he's going to do the Arnold Classic next year. And I don't think he's coming back to the Olympia. I think he's pretty pissed off of the way they treated him. So anyways, we had a new Mr. Olympia crowned this weekend. And, of course, it was Brandon Curry. And that's who I picked. Brandon won the Arnold this year. And he looked really good on stage. Very, very big bodybuilder. But he's got good shape because he's got a small waist. He's just had that fullness and that thickness that really no one else on stage had. He's really genetically gifted. Real big lats, you know, when he hit the back shots, he was just blowing pretty much everybody else away. He could have been a little harder. People were complaining about his conditioning. He was a little bit off on Friday night. At the Olympia, they do a two-day show, so it's Friday night and Saturday night, and just about everybody looked better on Saturday. So Brandon, he might not have been at his absolute best. I wasn't at the Arnold, so I don't know how he looked there. But he's got that kind of big, full muscle, so he's not really a real dry, ripped guy. So I thought he looked great for his physique, and I had a feeling he was going to take it after Friday night's prejudging. But he was a good winner, and he's a good guy. They brought his wife and his four kids up on stage with him after he won, and that was a really good moment in the contest. For those of you who don't know, Brandon goes out to Kuwait, and he trains out there for like 6-8 months at a time away from his family. And he said his wife was the one that really wanted him to do that, because when he turned pro, I don't know how long ago, it was probably 10 years ago, he always had the genetics, he always had the potential, but he was just so busy being a father and being with his kids that he wasn't able to put all the work into his bodybuilding, and he wasn't really able to fulfill his potential. And then when this thing came up with Kuwait and they wanted to bring him out there to train so he could just basically train in isolation, and all he does is train and eat and live the bodybuilding lifestyle 24 hours a day, his wife encouraged him to do it. And it's paid off now, because he is $400,000 richer and the winner of the Mr. Olympia. He is the 15th Mr. Olympia. And this was the 55th consecutive Mr. Olympia since the contest started in 1965. So congratulations to him. William Bonick was in second place. And I think William was second last year also. This guy has got an incredible physique. When you get to see him on stage, he is just so thick and so dense. I can't imagine how he could even be any better. He doesn't have the structure that Brandon Curry has, because he's not as tall and he's not as wide. And so he's kind of limited by his structure. But, I mean, this guy just really has an incredible, incredible physique from every angle, front, back, side. He is just so thick and hard. So that was a well-deserved second place. But it was very close between him and Hadi Chopan from Iran, who somehow got a visa to come to the United States and compete in the Mr. Olympia. So the crowd was really behind him. First time I got a chance to see him, and he was very, very impressive. Another short bodybuilder, usually competes in the 212 class, but he's extremely thick and very, very hard. He had striated quads, really thick abs, wide across the shoulders, really good arms, really not lacking anywhere. And maybe Brandon beat him on the back shots, but Hadi was very good shape, very hard, very dry. So the crowd was really behind him. And in fact, he won the People's Choice Award. They give a People's Choice Award at the Mr. Olympia. Rowley Winkler won it last year. So Hadi won it this year, and the crowd was really behind him. They were looking for an upset. They thought Hadi might even be able to win. I could have seen Hadi even placing second, but William Bonack was so good too. And so it was really, really tight between them. So what a debut, though, and I'm glad he did the open instead of the 212. He would have easily won the 212 class, no doubt about it, because nobody had his size, his thickness, and his hardness, just a combination of all three. He was very impressive to see, so we will see how he does in future competitions. Dexter Jackson was in fourth place. Dexter, of course, is 49 years old. I believe he's won 29 professional titles. He's the most winning professional bodybuilder ever in the history of the sport. And he's just incredible. He did his first Mr. Olympia in 1999, so it's been 20 years. This was his 20th Mr. Olympia, and he's just really incredible. He looked a little flat, I think. His chest looked a little flat, just didn't look as big, or he had that young muscle like the other three guys that placed ahead of him. But to place fourth in the Mr. Olympia at 49 years old, doing your 20th Mr. Olympia, is just absolutely incredible. It's a feat that no one else could match, and nobody probably ever will match that again. Incredible bodybuilder, and he looked really good tonight. It's not like he just got a sympathy vote. He really did look good. And he deserved that fourth place. And Rowley Winkler was fifth, and Rowley was very, very big, but just was off. He was really off at the prejudging. Wasn't the same physique that showed up last year, which I believe he got second last year or third. Got those freaky arms. Really freaky, most muscular, a really crazy wide rear lat spread. He was the only one to match Brandon Curry in the rear lat spread. But got to come in condition, especially a guy that big, and he's kind of got a wider waist. So he's really got to bring that conditioning like he did last year in order to do well. So he was in fifth place. And I also have to mention a couple other guys. Cedric McMillan, my favorite bodybuilder. I think he's got the greatest physique up there. I've said that several times before. But he just wasn't dry enough. You know, he has that fullness. He has that muscle size and shape, the great structure, does great poses. He's a really good poser, but he just wasn't hard enough. So I believe he was probably like seventh or eighth. I think he was seventh. Steve Kukla was sixth. And there was another guy, a new guy. His name is William Moore. And I believe he just won his pro card this year. And then I think they had a pro show in California, and he won that. So he was eligible for the Mr. Olympia. And this guy had one of the most outstanding physiques of the weekend. I really think he should have been in that first call out. He wasn't as big as some of these other guys, but you want to talk about an old school physique. He had wide shoulders, tiny waist, really hard physique in every angle, every pose he did. He just looked perfect. His legs weren't super huge, but they were sliced. It kind of reminded me a little bit of Phil Williams' physique, just a really high quality physique. And it's really a shame that he wasn't recognized by the judges and made that first call out. He actually was in the last call out of the pre-judging. And then at the night show, he gave a really good posing routine. I heard rumors that Lee Labrada, I think he works for Labrada Nutrition. So I think Lee Labrada was working with him on his posing. And you could tell because nobody really had a great routine that week, that whole weekend, or in the contest in the open division. But this guy had a really good routine. And you could tell it was Lee Labrada's influence that made it because it was very flowing. He hit every pose right perfectly. And it was a really, really well put together routine. So the future is really bright for William Moore. This guy has a fantastic physique. And I'm proud to say that the audience also recognized it because when he got done posing, he got a big ovation. So the audience really recognized that this guy was a quality physique. It's too bad the judges just didn't place him higher, because they really could have made a statement if they would have put him in that first call out saying that size isn't the most important thing. We're looking for a quality physique with the great structure, the small waist. He had the best abs in the whole open division. So I hope he doesn't put on too much size and ruin the quality of his physique, but I think he will get better as the years go by. And hopefully with guys like Chris Aceto, who's doing his diet, and maybe Lee Labrada also giving him influence, that he will do things the right way and not ruin his physique with all the drugs that these other guys are taking. And he will keep developing that quality physique. And then hopefully the judges will recognize this, because this could really change the direction of the sport. And then I also want to talk a little bit about the classic physique Olympia. Breon Ansley, who used to work for Old School Labs. I got a chance to know Breon over the last couple of years. Really, really great guy. Wonderful physique. Kind of shorter, but just really put together perfectly. He's got the size, but he's also got great symmetry, great conditioning. And in the pictures leading up to this contest, he looked just amazing, the pictures he was posting on YouTube. So unfortunately, Breon got second, but he was beat out by a really good bodybuilder, Chris Bumstead from Canada. Chris kind of reminds me of like Barry DeMay. He's very tall, probably 6'2", great leg development. It's a great vacuum pose. He was so shredded and lean for this contest. I don't remember ever seeing him that ripped. So he looked fantastic. This whole division is amazing. I think there was 38 competitors. And out of those 38 competitors, probably 30 of them were outstanding. I was watching the prejudging, and I just couldn't believe the quality of these guys. It was just really amazing. There's so many good physiques in this division. So congratulations to Chris Bumstead. He seems like a really, really nice guy. They interviewed him after the show. Very humble young man. So he really worked for it because he had a fantastic physique. And then George Peterson from New York was in third place. George won the Arnold Classic this year. I seen him win the Nationals. I think it was in 2016 maybe. And really outstanding physique on George Peterson. Incredible back development. Probably one of the best backs in all of bodybuilding, in any division. And I never seen George look like this either. This was the best condition of his life. He was so ripped, and he does some great poses. He did this kneeling three-quarter back pose, or actually it's like a back bicep pose, like a twisting back bicep pose. Did it perfectly. And in his routine, I noticed he did a three-quarter back pose from both sides, like Lee Haney used to do. So out of these three guys, I mean, they were all in peak condition. It was like apples and oranges. It was really hard to pick a winner, and it's a shame that someone – like Breon has to take second or George has to take third, but they were all outstanding. And these were the same top three from last year. So it just goes to show you, I don't think anybody's, I mean, these guys are the best of the division right now, and it's going to be hard to pass any of them by. Keon Pearson was in fourth. He's a shorter competitor, very thick, incredible front double bicep, great vacuum pose. And then a guy named Chen Kang, who I'm assuming is from China, he took fifth place. I never saw him before. Another kind of shorter bodybuilder, really good leg development, like a lot of these Oriental competitors have. They usually have very thick legs. And Chen Kang also had very thick striated quads, but he was in fantastic condition. And another great poser, really well thought out, and transitions were great. Just really hit the poses really perfectly. So some really good posing routines. The only thing that's missing is that no one's really coming up with some really great music that gets the crowd into it. Especially in the open, I heard a lot of rap songs and just music that nobody can relate to. If they picked a really good song and really put a great routine behind it, it would be a classic. Like the guys in the 80s and 90s used to do. Barry DeMay used to pose some great music that was very popular with the audience. And we still remember those songs, you know. And same thing with Sean Ray did that too. Some of the other divisions, the 212 division, Derek Lunsford, who lives out here in Tampa, has an incredible physique. A young guy, I think he's only 24. Another guy with just an incredible front double bicep pose. Probably one of the best front double biceps in the sport right now. Great vacuum. His lats just jut out. He's got that taper from the shoulders to the waist. Great arms. This guy's got everything. And everybody thought for sure he was going to win. He was second last year to Flex Lewis on his last win. But he was a little bit off. His conditioning was a little bit off. Last year he was a little flat because I think he dieted too long. And this year he was really big and full, but just not ripped enough. And a guy named Kamal Elgarney from Libya took first place. And Kamal is 47 years old. He's been competing for a long time. Didn't have the physique, didn't have the structure or the muscle shape or the size that Derek Lunsford had, but he was hard as a rock, really, really hard. And he deservingly got it. And another great guy, they did an interview with him after the show on stage. And he seems like a very humble, very great guy. So congratulations to him, and hopefully Derek Lunsford can get it next year. This guy's got all the potential in the world. He just has to peak. But he's still young. You know, he's still got a long way to go. Women's physique, Shanique Grant, who I believe used to live in Chicago. I think she lives out in Vegas now. Incredible, incredible physique on Shanique Grant. She's like Linda Murray's. Tiny waist, wide shoulders, incredible abs, incredible legs. She's like the Sergio Oliva of women's bodybuilding or women's physique. And she was in great shape. I think this was her second win in a row. And then in figure, my favorite competitor, Latora Watts, who won the figure Olympia twice, and then she placed low after that and then just stepped away from the sport. She was back, and I thought she just looked incredible. I can't think of a better winner than her. But she got second place, unfortunately, to Cindy Gillen, who is also another great physique. She's from the Florida area, and it was very, very tight between them. So hopefully Latora Watts will come back because – just a beautiful lady and incredible physique. So looking forward to seeing her back on stage. But it was a great event. It was really well put together. I want to congratulate Dan Solomon, who was running the show for the first time this year. Dan's a friend of mine. We've actually had him on the podcast before, and he did a fantastic job. Congratulations to him and to all the people involved. It was really, really a great show. I was really happy to be out there and had a really good time watching the show. It was on digitalmuscle.com. So if you didn't get a chance to see it, go to digitalmuscle.com and you can probably check it out there. And when I was out at the Olympia on Friday, you know, I got an email. It's called FeedSpot. And it said that the Bodybuilding Legends podcast made the top 15 bodybuilding audio podcast. Title is The Top 15 Bodybuilding Audio Podcast and Radio You Must Subscribe and Listen to in 2019. And number one was Heavy Muscle Radio, which is RX Muscle, Dave Palumbo and Chris Aceto. But number two was the Bodybuilding Legends show, Bodybuilding Legends podcast. So that was really an honor. So we are number two out of the top 15. So thank you to all you guys that support the show. And I don't know how they voted on this or how they did it, but hey, I'll take it. Second place. That's fantastic. I don't even think we were in the top 15 last year. So that was really, really good to see. I put that on my Facebook page and shared that. So I wanted to mention that good news with everybody out there who regularly listens to the show. At the Olympia also, I only went to the expo on one day, which was Saturday, because we were shooting a video with Samir and this young kid, Logan, who works for Old School Labs. And we shot a video with Logan, who's getting ready for the Nationals in the Classic Physique division. So Saturday, I got a chance to go to the expo. And there was a booth called the Legends booth, Legends of Bodybuilding booth. And Lee Haney was running it. So I went there and I saw Lee Haney. It was great to see him. I saw Barry DeMay, of course, and Tony Pearson was there, and I got a chance to talk to Tony. He just came out with a new book, so that's available on Amazon.com. Just look up Tony Pearson in the search, and you should be able to find it. He just came out with that book, and I asked him about being on the podcast, and he said he would love to, so that's great to hear. So hopefully we can get Tony on. He looked fantastic. 62 years old. He was wearing a tank top, very lean. He still got the shoulders and arms. He looked fantastic. He looked really young in the face. I also saw Troy Zuccolato. Troy won in 1989, and Troy is a real big success now. He is running these HRT clinics, and he was one of the first ones to do it, and he's doing it out in the California Beverly Hills area. I believe he's got six of them, and he also is making so much money, he now has a vineyard. He bought a vineyard, plus he owns three hotels in the Disney area, the Disneyland area. So Troy is really one of the huge success stories of all the bodybuilders. So I got to see him, and he said he would love to come on the show too. Seemed like a really, really nice guy. So that was a lot of fun, and I just missed Dorian Yates. I guess Dorian stopped by and was taking some pictures with Lee Haney. So I wish I could have been there for that, but I just left and I missed that. But that was definitely the highlight of the expo for me, was that Legends booth. And Lee was very nice. He said he really loves my podcast, and he said he loves the work that I'm doing, interviewing older guys, the legends of the sport, and keeping that history alive. So he said he was going to talk to Dan Solomon for me and see if we can get that more involved with the Olympia, the podcast. So we'll see what happens with that. But thank you to Lee for that high recommendation. And Lee said anytime we want to have him back on the show, he would love to come on because he really believes in what we're doing. I also got a new book in the mail when I got home today. It's called The Zane Bodybuilding Manual, of course, written by Frank Zane. And this is a fantastic book. If you guys are into Frank Zane, he's got this whole section about all the contests he went into, how he prepared for it, and the rest of the book is all about nutrition and training and the mental aspect of it. I didn't really get a chance to get into it yet. I just sort of looked through it, but I can't wait to read this book. It's really a great book. It's got, let's see, about over 400 pages. So it's really worth the money. It was kind of expensive. I think it was like $77, but Frank signs it for you. He autographs it. To me, it was worth it. So I can't wait to get into this. It seems like this is everything that Frank has learned in his many, many years of bodybuilding. I think Frank is now 77 years old. He's born in 42, I believe. Yeah, he's about 5 years older than Arnold. So this is a compilation of all that he's learned in his life. So it's really, really a great book. So I would recommend that to all you guys who are interested in Frank Zane and all that he can teach you. We did have two emails from last week's show with Lonnie Tieper, a good friend, Scott Barron, who is a big supporter of the podcast. He said, John, your interview on rxmuscle.com with Dave Palumbo and having Lonnie Tieper on the Bodybuilding Legends show was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. You were able to incorporate what you know best, those magical years of golden era bodybuilding, specifically the three Mr. Olympias won by Zane in 1977 through 79, the controversial Mr. Olympias of 1980 and 81, and how you met Arnold, Franco, and Lou at Universal Studios back in 1977. The timing of your Grand Slam interviews is perfect with the upcoming Mr. Olympia. Also, the Arnold fight at Gold's Gym clip that is on YouTube is pure genius for rightfully earning more clicks and broadening your audience. The fun yet historically significant interview on RX with Dave's expanded audience is excellent publicity for your show. The show topics coupled with the strategic timing prove you've utilized your recovery time well. And then he says, yes, Mark Martinez would be a great person to interview. I did interview Mark Martinez about a year ago about his movie. But when Mark's movie about the golden era of bodybuilding in California comes out, I told him I want to have him back on the show for sure. So thank you, Scott, for that. And for those of you that didn't see that interview that he's talking about on RX Muscle, that is on YouTube under RX Muscle's page. So check that out. And Dave said he wants to have me on again. And then I also got an email from Derek Jedmintis, hope I'm saying that right. And he says, John, always enjoy your episodes, but after listening to you and Lonnie Tieper discuss the 1988 Mr. Olympia, I watched that final pose down again. What an incredible lineup. Not the size we see today, but incredible physiques. Thanks for the always interesting and great episodes, Derek. All right. Thank you, Derek. Yeah, that is one of my favorite, if not the favorite, Mr. Olympias for me. It was that 88 Olympia. All right, and before we get to our interview with Jim Seitzer, I also want to mention our other sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results that you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number, which is 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. And if you mention that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, they will give you a free consultation, plus they will also give you 20% off your order. All right, that is it for opening. Here's our interview with Jim Seitzer, one of the best amateur bodybuilders in the 1970s. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And my special guest this week is Mr. James Seitzer. Jim has competed in the 70s and the early 80s, and he was one of the top amateur bodybuilders in the world. Pleasure to have you on the phone, Jim. How you doing?
Good. Great to be here, John.
Yeah, I can remember you from the magazines when I was a kid, and I used to read the magazines, and I remember you were always at the top of the Mr. America and Mr. Junior USA and USA. Tell us a little bit, Jim, how you got into bodybuilding. What age were you, and what got you motivated to start lifting weights?
Well, I'd been a gymnast since I was a lot younger, and did gymnastics in high school and went to Ohio State University with a athletic scholarship there. And lettered my first 3 years. I was doing just great. And then 2 weeks before the Big Ten, I had a pretty nasty injury, a bicep tear, actually in the muscle belly, not the tendon itself. When I was on rings, I was doing straight arm shoots on rings. And that basically took me out of competition my senior year. So I found myself in a weight room. I was trying desperately to get back in the game. And I was like doing everything I could to strengthen the area. But you know, it didn't work. But I found lifting weights, so to speak. And then after I graduated, I was, moping around the campus a couple of weeks later, and I stumbled into the OSU weightlifting club, and that was it. I was, pretty much hooked and just started lifting, trained there for about a year and a half. Wasn't making much progress, although I was training really hard. And then one day, on a Saturday morning, guy comes in there, bench pressing. He was thick, strong, had a lot of muscle, and was moving a lot of weight. I worked up enough nerve, and I went over to talk to him. And we talked for a half an hour, and he said, he goes, why don't you come down to my place next Saturday for we're going to start squatting down there. And that was Louis Simmons.
Okay.
So that was the start of him bringing people on board, and there were five of us originally.
Wow.
And we trained in his garage out back on 590 Larkham.
What year was this, Jim?
This was 1976.
Wow. Okay. How old were you at this point?
I was just like, you know, 18, 19 years old, pretty young.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. And, so he'd been powerlifting for 10 years and did all that on his own. And then, I don't know, just decided to start working out with people. But he got me squatting heavy and taught me how to squat. And I didn't even know what I was doing for a full year. I mean, I just had no idea what was going on. And just did what he told me, put on about 20 pounds of muscle that first year. John. And jeez. Then, yeah, you know. And then it was off to the races because I just kept gaining more and more size from heavy squats, heavy deadlifts, and heavy benches. So my body was primed for that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I might have been one of the first real power bodybuilders in the country at that point in time.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought him up because I remember I heard an interview you did with Rough, Rugged, and Raw, the podcast, and I just saw it. Documentary about Louis Simmons is called West Side versus the World. I don't know if you saw that yet. It was on Netflix. I saw it about 2 weeks ago. Yeah. So it made me think about you, and I knew we had this interview coming up. So I wanted to ask you about Louis because I knew you knew him from back then. So what did Louis teach you with your training? I mean, was it something revolutionary that not a lot of powerlifters were doing at that time, or was it just all new to you because you were kind of new to weight training?
It was all new to me, and basically we were just doing power squats. He taught me how to squat like a powerlifter with a wider stance, the bar down low on my back. And he taught me that how to push through psychological barriers and boundaries. He taught me how not to be afraid of weight. It's okay to be scared and nervous when you're underneath heavy weight. And if you're not, you know, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah. Right.
But he taught all of us never to fear weight. And I learned that lesson very well. There was nothing I was afraid to get underneath. I didn't care what it was. Yeah, I'm nervous. And it's like, this is, you know, bone crushing weight, and you better be psyched up. You better be revved up for this. But and even to this day, that's something that really sticks with you. The psychological things about lifting that he taught us all were so tremendous. And if I can pass that on to people today, I do, because oftentimes with so many years of training behind you, you know what somebody's capable of doing way before they are. And
yeah.
It's a good way to give back to people along with the technical things. But the great thing about the early garage days that you don't get out of the movie is that I call the technical days. And that's where he came up with all these different things like rack benches, rack deadlifts, and all these tools for the toolbox to get stronger with. After 6, 7, 8 years of that, you know, he went into a lot of the percent training things and a lot of things that the Bulgarians and the Russians were doing as far as how to structure your workouts for optimal training purposes. So, but those early days were great. I was there the night that he came up with the idea for the reverse hyper.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. That's cool.
Oh, yeah. I remember it like it was yesterday. It was a Friday night after a squat workout. He threw a 2x6 into the power rack and strung a bar in there and jumped up on this thing, started swinging his legs. And Jesus, we were laughing so hard we couldn't believe it. You know, we were busting his chops for this stupid, you know, stupid looking thing he was doing. But you know what? He just stayed with it. We all stayed with it. About 6, 7 months later, I had 80 pounds more on my squat. And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to keep my mouth shut.
Right. This guy knows what he's doing.
I don't know what the hell I'm doing, talking about. And that was always the way it is with Louis. I would say 80% of the ideas he had were good and they had value and the efficacy and the other 2 out of 10, you know, we just pitched it out the door, but that's a pretty good success rate, you know?
Oh yeah, for sure. Now, when you guys did that reverse hyper, did you use a lot of weight and kind of swing it up? Is that the right form for that?
Yeah, the original weight was the only way we had of adding weight to it was we got these carpenter belts, these leather belts, and we would string 25 pound plates between our legs, sometimes up to 6 25 pound plates, and you'd have a spotter grab the belt and lift you up so you could get onto the board of the platform that we had in place then. And we'd reach forward and grab the rack. And then we'd start, we would swing it up, you know, but you know, at that much weight, even if you did have some inertia built into the system, you were still getting insane, lower back, glute and posterior chain, workout. And I'll tell you something, John, and the reverse hypers work best still with that old system.
Really? Okay.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And you know what? Anybody that ever did them like that knows that. So you have to have the reverse hyper the way it is now because it's impossible to, you know, strap weights to people's ankles and it really works very well. Don't get me wrong. It really does. But if you want that ultimate effect and ultimate result from reverse hypers, just try pulling the swing arm out of the way and start strapping weights to your ankles and you'll know quick enough.
Wow, that's crazy. Because we got one of those at our gym. I train at a Powerhouse Athletic Club in Tampa. And they've had one. Well, they had another gym downtown. They had it there too. And sometimes I'll see the bikini girls on there. They just won't use any weight. They'll just lift their legs up and try and squeeze their glutes and stuff. But I know watching Louis in another documentary, I think it was on YouTube, he was saying how it can even help people who have bad backs because it pulls the vertebrae apart.
Oh, yeah, it does. I mean, you know, we lived on that thing. It basically bulletproofed our backs. And it
wow.
Actually, he broke his back twice.
And yeah, I remember.
Yeah. He used that to get him back lifting heavy again. But I don't know why it should be a standard piece of equipment in every single gym, because if it's used correctly, you'll have a lower back that's just insane. I mean, it's just super strong.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm gonna start using it again because I've got problems with my lower back from all the years of training. So I'm gonna incorporate that into my workouts again.
Sounds good.
So when you were doing this now, Jim, were you thinking along the lines of, I want to be a power lifter? Well, you were a power lifter. Were you ever thinking about doing bodybuilding, or were you thinking more of being a power lifter?
Well, it was funny. I was tiptoeing back and forth between the two worlds of bodybuilding and powerlifting. So I was a power lifter at Louis 6 months out of the year. I would shift gears and start prepping for bodybuilding the other 6 months out of the year. But I was still going down to Lou's to do like heavy box squats and heavy rack deadlifts and things like that to keep my size up while
okay.
I was, getting ready for a bodybuilding show.
Okay,
so
gotcha.
That's how I did it. And I was allowed down there because Louis wanted to prove that you could build a upper level, top level bodybuilder using powerlifting.
Were you the only bodybuilder in that original group in that garage?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah. Okay. So what was your first show that you did, Jim?
First bodybuilding show, I won to Mr. OSU, which is Ohio State University. I won that three times. They would have it on a quarterly basis. I thought it was pretty hot stuff. And then I went up to Cleveland for the Junior Mr. America, and I think there were 22 people in that, and I got 21st.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. And you know what? That wound up being a very important lesson. And I thought, I need to start winning shows that are regional and local type of things. And I did.
Right.
So I set my sights on the South Ohio District and the North Ohio District and Mr. Metropolitan down in Cincinnati and like things, smaller competitions like that. Won all those and then went to the Mr. Ohio and won that.
Okay.
So that was a very important win. And then from there, I started going to regional national competitions like the Great Lakes Open up in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Won that. And then Jim Mannion would always start the national season off with the Mideast Open in Pittsburgh. That was the
okay.
kickoff for the national the nationals that year. And I won that one in the best year that I had, which is in 79, and then went on to the USA 6 weeks after that, won that. And then at Mr. America down in Atlanta, I got second place to Ron Tufel in the short class.
Okay. Wow. What
lost
year did you win the
point.
Lost by 1 point. Wow. What year did you win the Mr. Ohio, Jim?
That was 77.
77. Okay.
Yeah.
Now were you in Cincinnati or were you in Columbus? Cause I know Louis is in Columbus, right?
Yeah, I was born and raised here in Columbus. I've been here my whole life.
Okay, gotcha. Did you go to any of those shows what Arnold and Lorimer were putting on?
I started working for Jim and Arnold in 1976.
The very first one, yeah.
Yeah, the very first one. And I'm probably the only person left that hasn't missed a show.
Oh, really? Wow, that's awesome. How was that experience going to there and working firsthand with those guys?
Oh, man, it was great. I mean, you know, back in the 70s, Arnold would come in town, and this was after he won his 5 Mr. Olympias.
Yeah.
And Jim Lorimer had a workout area in his basement, and we'd get together and go down there and work out and all that stuff. And Arnold come to town and I'd go pick him up at the airport and we'd drive around and do things like that. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, it was a dream. it was a dream come true situation. You know, I couldn't have been luckier.
How was Arnold back then? Because this was before he started his movie career. And like you said, his bodybuilding career just ended. And he was getting into the contest promotion with Jim Lorimer. So what was Arnold like?
He was a pretty good guy. I mean, he was very motivated. And, you know, and him and Jim are trying to put this whole thing together for promotion. And, you know, mm-hmm. they were working on it and that type of thing. And but he was always great to me, very nice. And, you know, I think he realized that, you know, I was I was dreaming to be a bodybuilder and all that kind of thing. And
yeah,
I'll tell you one really good story.
Yeah.
I was promoting the Mr. OSU competition, me and my partner back then. And so it was all like local bodybuilders and college kids and stuff like that. And I said something to Jim Lorimer. I said, geez, you think Arnold would want to maybe come by and see the show and, I don't know, maybe hand out a trophy or two or something like that? He mm-hmm. goes, well, let me ask him. So sure enough, I hear back that, yeah, Arnold's going to be there. He's going to – this is on Ohio State's campus at the Mershon Auditorium. He goes, yeah, he'll be there and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So I told my girlfriend who had a roommate who was just beautiful. I mean, her she was a college student, but she was like almost 6 feet tall, gorgeous blonde hair, blue-eyed girl, was a model around town, did modeled clothes for some of the stores in Columbus like Lazarus and those places. And I told her, I said, Debbie, listen, Arnold Schwarzenegger is going to be backstage, and I just want you to chat him up and just keep him back here. Don't let him leave until the concert is over. Because I was afraid he was going to bolt, you know, just
right.
I'll leave, you know. And I was pretty sure she was going to keep his interest. So sure enough, that worked out, and he handed out all the trophies and got up there and did a little speech and talked and all that kind of stuff. You know, so I'm probably the only guy in the world that got Arnold to do something like that for nothing.
Right. For Ohio State.
And then the interesting thing is they wound up kind of seeing each other. Like, so when he would come in town, they'd go out on a date and kind of stuff. And then me and my girlfriend, we were like double dating with him.
No kidding. Wow. What was that like?
Yeah, that was great. Yeah, go out to dinner and we're, you know, at a nice restaurant and just kind of like hanging out, you know. And,
mm-hmm.
It was, you know, hey, man, I was living good, buddy.
Was he fun to hang out with? I'm sure he was a great time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just likes to laugh and, you know, he's cracking jokes and, you know. He's ornery as cat piss, you know. He just really, he's ornery as hell, as we all know. But
right.
It was a lot of fun. And actually, they were kind of an item there for a while. And then he met Maria and he was seeing her here in Columbus. And then, you know, he broke it off with her in a very good, honorable way. And uh-huh. I met somebody else that, you know, I'm real serious about, and, you know, you're terrific and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, we'll stay friends and all that. And so he did it very, very nicely. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
it's funny you mentioned that because I remember now when I saw the 1977 Mr. Olympia on My World of Sports, I think he was at Ohio State University, right? Didn't they do a film, a segment where he was out on the field and they had a bunch of people around him and he's like he lifted a barbell overhead and then he was answering questions like a little mini seminar.
Yeah, I don't remember that exactly, but yeah, we had like 76 was the first Mr. Olympia here in Columbus. And then mm-hmm. we did 77, 78. And
79, yeah.
I think, yeah, 79. And then after that, it went to Sydney, Australia. And he actually did his last competition and won that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Weeders said something like, you know, we're going to move this thing around. It went to Italy. It went to, you know, other places that it just, you know, it didn't work anywhere near as well as it did here in Columbus.
Yeah.
And then that's when, then in 88, Jim and Arnold decided, you know, the heck, you know, we're gonna start doing our own thing, and that's when the Arnold Classic started in 1988.
Okay, so every time they've done a show out there, you've been a part of it, huh? You've helped them out with it.
I'm knocking on wood, John, but I haven't missed a single show yet.
That's awesome. So tell me about the 76, the first time they had it. Were Arnold and Jim a little nervous about how it was going to go off?
I don't recall if they were that nervous or anything. I just remember it was at Best Memorial Auditorium, and they had an okay crowd. I mean, people came in for it. Of course, mm-hmm. Jim Lorimer is just a genius organizer. I mean, he truly is a genius. And with the two of those guys heading it up, each one with their own strong points, it was a success. And I think it was just basically bodybuilding back then. There wasn't an expo, and there wasn't all the other sports and that type of thing. So it was great. I mean, afterwards, we were all upstairs in the hotel lobby smoking cigars till 2 or 3 in the morning and just having a blast. I mean, it was the high, heady days in those early years.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man, that'd be great. I was lucky enough to go out to see the Olympia in 77, 78, 79. And I was just a kid. I was still in high school, but I lived in Chicago. So I talked my dad into making the trip every year. So we went out there. But I'll never forget those days. Those contests were so great.
Oh, yeah.
Did you get a chance to meet Franco or Zane or any of the top guys that were in the Olympia that year?
Oh, I met them all.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone.
Any guys that stand out for those 4 years that they had, those first 4 years?
Well, a guy that probably nobody today knows about or would remember, because he never won the Mr. Olympia, but he tried all the time, and that was Mike Katz.
Yeah.
And he was – I liked Mike. I mean, he was a good guy, but, geez, what a character. he was just like a real character. And I think, you know, he could have gone on to become some kind of somebody in The Simpsons or something like that. I mean, he was just out there kind of guy, and made me laugh, you know, made you laugh a lot, and just kind of always looked forward to him. And of course, Franco, I mean, you know, and Frank Zane, especially back in those days, they were just gods. I mean, they were the mm-hmm. gods of bodybuilding, and, you know, you just, it was just such a thrill to even be around them, you know, and you're nervous and all that kind of stuff when you're a kid like that. And, you know, it was just a chance of a lifetime.
Yeah. Yeah. The first year I went in 77, I tried to describe this to people today. I said, the people in the crowd were screaming, like they were all standing up and screaming like a bunch of teenage girls at a Beatles concert or something, you know. I said it was unbelievable. I've never seen that kind of reaction since those days, you know, since those early days.
Yeah. Yeah. It was something, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, you were lucky to get to, you know, go to all those shows and then be a part of it and then actually hang out with Arnold. That's really cool.
Sure was, I'll tell you.
So were you thinking back then, Jim, that you wanted to win the America? Was that the goal? Because I know that's what everybody wanted to be right back then. All the top amateurs wanted to be Mr. America.
I didn't think like that. I was always ambitious to do the best I possibly could. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if I had a better condition the next show, that was success to me. And oh, geez, I just happened to win that too. Well, that's great, you know.
Yeah.
But I was always more involved in the process than anything else. I never, ever assumed I was going to win a competition. But I tried very, very hard to assume that I will get better for that next show. I'll be bigger. I'll be, you know, more. I'll have more definition. I'll be more cut. My posing will be better. That's what I always strived for. And a lot of that came from Louis because he would his idea about competing and putting yourself out there was probably a little different than a lot of people. A lot of people might set their sights on something like the Mr. America or something like that. I never really did that. I set my sights on getting as good as I possibly could. So, and, you know, but I tell you, the big difference between today and back then when we were doing it, Number one thing is diet technology. If I would have had the diet technology that is known today, if all of us would have had it back then, oh God, it would have been a whole different ballgame, man.
Jeez. Right.
Oh, you know, so instead of coming on stage at like 194 or something like that, I would have come in at, you know, like 214 or something, because
nobody knew
how to feed the muscle back then. It was just this, just nobody knew how to do it.
Yeah. So did you bulk up and then really cut down like a lot of guys did back then?
Yeah. I mean, I was always naturally lean. So I would get up to like 212, 215 on the off season. But I was still kind of lean looking. I mean, and Louis used to bark at me and say, you need to put on another 10, 15 pounds. You need to get up to 225. And I'd try everything under the sun. I mean, I would try to eat all this junk, which I didn't like to do, but I still couldn't push really past 215 at all.
How tall are you, Jim?
5'6".
5'6", okay.
But, you know, but we just didn't eat. We weren't eating the way that everybody does today. I mean, it would have been a totally different ball game. There was one guy who figured it out before anybody else, and that was O.J. Smith up in Toledo, Ohio. And this guy, he was kind of a taller guy, big muscle bellies, always super ripped, super grainy. Hmm. Every show I ever saw him in, I looked at him, I thought, Jesus, man, this guy's just, this guy's out of hand. And I was talking to him one time, and I said, hey, you know, what are you doing, man? He goes, I do it all with diet. And I said, what do you mean diet? He goes, well, I'll send this to you. So he sends me his diet. And you know what he was doing?
What?
He was eating six times a day.
Mm-hmm.
And he was eating like people do today.
Right.
And I tried that getting ready for a bodybuilding competition. And the timing wasn't right. And it kind of smoothed me out and kind of blew out my shape, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how to handle it. I didn't know what to do with it. And so I stopped doing it because I thought, well, this isn't working for me. And the big mistake I made is I didn't go back to it.
Yeah. Okay. What was the guy's name again, Jim?
O.J. Smith.
O.J. Smith. Okay. I never heard of him. That's interesting.
Yeah. And he won like the – a few years ago, from what I've heard, he won the – natural Mr. America for, you know, this guy was like in his 70s or something like that.
Wow. Unbelievable.
And he still had all this great, you know, and I heard about the competition that he looked good and all that kind of stuff. And he just, he has the whole diet thing down to a T. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause back then guys would just go like real low carbs, right? Isn't that how you got ready for a show?
Oh yeah. Starvation stuff. It was terrible.
Basically. Yeah. Right.
Stuff, man. I mean, it's like, oh God, you know, Jesus, but things move forward and then you get where we are today. You know, it's just like,
yeah. Well, if you think about it too, I mean, there was no internet, so it wasn't as easy to figure out the diet as it is today. You know, I mean, people can get all the numbers from all the food they're eating and they can figure things out. But back then it was like, we didn't have that information. Right.
Right. Yeah, I mean, from relationships, you know, you became friends with somebody like Ron Tufel or Bob Jockowitz and Ergobek. You know, you'd talk to these guys and, you know, sometimes they'd tell you about what they're doing, but they oftentimes didn't know any better than anybody else. We were all basically doing the same thing, you know, and then the mentors got involved and, in the late 70s and through the early 80s, guys like Gary Leonard, he won the Mr. America in 1980 in Santa Monica.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a great guy. He looked great that day. He absolutely deserved it. He just looked phenomenal.
I'm glad you brought up Ron Tufel because I'm looking at your contest history here and I see you did the AAU Mr. USA in 1978 and Tufel won that show. So tell me about that. You got third place in the short class behind Sammy Willis and Ron Tufel. So what was that experience like? What was that contest like? Ron was in really
unreal.
Great shape at that show, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. He came on. He just destroyed the whole field, and he just looked so great. His confidence was fantastic. Just a real show posing. That win set the stage for him that we've talked about online. With the 1978 Mr. America contest down in Cincinnati.
Right.
And he came into that. Yeah, he just came into that like a colossus and super condition. Just absolutely should have won it in my by my lights, and it didn't happen. You know, as we all know.
Yeah. So tell me about that show too, because we still talk about that show today. Plus, it was close between Tufel and Platts, wasn't it, in your class and the short class?
Yeah, it was. I mean, Ron had the upper body. Of course, you know, Tom Platts had his legs and everything, and they were fantastic. But Ron had the momentum as the most popular bodybuilder in the world, amateur bodybuilder in the world at that time. And coming off that USA win, he was a steamroller. He just had a great day. He should have won the America, too. He would have gone 2 for 2 in the majors. It didn't happen. Yeah, the whole place just almost, they were just about ripping chairs out of the.
No way, really? Holy cow. No shit.
All right. They were pissed, believe me. It got a little ugly back there, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I've talked to a few people who saw that contest or were in that contest, and they all say the same thing pretty much. They said it was really controversial. When they did the team for the universe, Platt beat Pearson because I think Ron took off, right? So then they had the middleweight class close down, and then Tom Platts beat Tony Pearson.
Yeah, right. And I don't remember that so well. I'm not sure I even saw that. But, it did happen like that.
So tell me about 79, because you said that was probably your best year, right? You started off with the Junior USA, and you won the overall there.
Yeah, I actually started out with the in May of 79, Jim Manu put on the Mideast Open, like the 21st of May. And then 6 weeks later was the Junior USA in Memphis.
Okay.
And basically 6 weeks after that was the Mr. Contest in Atlanta at the Peachtree Theater.
So, America. Okay.
Yeah. And that was pretty much a burned out cinder by the time that was over. It was just rock and roll and, you know, living the dream, living the bodybuilding dream. I was married to it.
What do you think you looked better at, Jim? Was it the Junior USA or was it the America?
Actually, it was the Mideast Open.
Oh, the first one. Okay.
Yeah. I came in. I didn't even know how I made that condition, John. I just came in big, insanely ripped. I had veins just, just look at the pictures and I thought, geez, I can, I just came in. I just hit this blinding peak and really not knowing why or how. And I had 7 out of 7 first place votes in there. It wasn't even, I didn't have any problem with that at all. Franklin Pierce was the head judge for that. And then 6 weeks later, I came in a little smooth for the Junior USA, but I was a lot bigger, and I needed that because those guys were bigger there. But I was still cut enough that, and my symmetry would usually pull me through, that, you know, I walked away with the first place trophy and 2 or 3 of the best body parts. That's when they were doing body parts back then, like best arms, best legs, and all that kind of stuff, you know.
Did you like that when they did the body parts?
I didn't think. The only one I really liked was the most muscular trophy. I thought that had a lot of meaning to it. But I didn't really think too much one way or the other for getting best legs or best arms or back or something like that. But, you know, I'm not sure how the other guys felt about it.
So when you went to the America that year, did you feel like after winning that Junior USA that you were one of the favorites in the short class?
That's a good question. I went in there. I worked as hard as I could for it. And I thought, you know, I'm just going to keep my head down and keep throwing punches. I came in pretty ripped, but I came in smaller than I should have, but I was definitely really good. And on the pose down between in the short class, actually they brought me and Ron Tufel out there and one other guy. And this is great. We're backstage. We're kind of getting ready to go out, just the three of us, you know. And Tufel comes up to me and he goes, "Seitzer, if you don't flash these legs at me, I won't flash these abs at you."
That's great.
And I looked at him and I like, you know, like, what? What did you say? You know, and, you know, and we went out there and we just, you know, it was just a slugfest of a pose down. And there were 7 judges. He got 4 first place second place votes, and I got 3 first place votes and 4 second place votes.
Wow. So you guys just split it by 1 point then. It was definitely between you two, yeah.
Yep.
How did Ron look that year compared to 78?
I think he was a little smaller. I think he was he came in great shape. There's no question about it. Most of the guys did back in those days. They came in really ripped. But mm-hmm. I think he was a little smaller and maybe a little chewed up from the season that year. He looked great. And Ray Mentzer won it that year. And he deserved to win it. He came out there and just pretty much cleaned house.
Yeah.
He was big.
He was a pretty dominating winner, I remember.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely deserved it. And I became real good friends with Ron after that. He lived in Prospect Park, PA. And we'd get on the phone and chat sometimes. And, you know, I'd see him at different competitions and things like that. So he wound up being a good guy, you know.
Oh, that's great. Were you sad when he passed away? He passed away at a young age, right?
I was. That bothered me. That one bothered me right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, people today don't remember how great of a competitor he was, and he was so young, too. I remember, like, when he was in the, I think, 76 America, and I think he won the short class that year, too. I think he was only, like, 21 years old, or maybe even 20 years old. He was really young.
I think he won the teenage America, too.
Yeah, he did, yeah. Yeah, so then he must have been, I think he must have been 20 in 76, because I think he won the teen America in 75, if my memory's right. But, man, he had a lot of thickness, you know, for a young guy, and those abs were incredible.
Oh, yeah. His midsection was like, I mean, if Ferrari was going to design a midsection, they would design Ron Tuffel's midsection.
Right.
It was. And, I mean, those abs were so heavily plated and ripped, and it was like, who in the hell has stuff like this, you know?
Right. Like,
really? You got to put me up against this?
Did you ever ask him what he did for his abs when you guys became friends?
Yeah, but, you know, he basically said, hey, I don't have to do a whole, you know, he worked
just
hard.
Genetic, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Genetic as hell, you know.
Right.
Bill, it's hard to see a midsection like that today, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it is. I mean, they were just so deep. That's what it was. They were just so deep, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1980, then, Jim, you went back to the America again, but this time now they had it in weight classes instead of height classes. And so you were in the light heavies. What did you weigh for that one?
Santa Monica. I think I came in probably around, I'd say somewhere around 188 to 190.
Okay.
I came in light. I made a big mistake, John. After 79, there was so much, I had so much press about that great year I had and all these people writing stuff about, you know, he's going to go on to do this and that and the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
I took it too seriously. And I took like a week off after the Mr. America in 79. And then I started training. I started training wrong. And when I say wrong, I started training very, very hard and very intense. I was doing 2-a-days all through that fall and then all through the winter. And by the time I got to the point where I needed to start prepping for the Mr. America in Santa Monica, I was pretty much burned out.
Yeah.
I was spent, and I knew it at that point. So, but I didn't have anybody, I didn't have a model to follow. I didn't have anybody to consult with, and no one said, hey, man, stop training so hard right now. Just, you know, go back to powerlifting.
Mm-hmm.
And get in there 3 days a week and lift heavy and rest up your systems and all that kind of stuff and then turn it on in April and May, you know, that type of thing.
Right, right.
So as a result, I mean, I came into the America in good shape. I think I got 5th or 6th there in my weight class, but I was just too small and just not crisp like I usually was.
Mm-hmm.
By then I knew, you know, I'd done the whole year leading up to it, not the right way.
Yeah. Just overtrained.
Mm-hmm.
What was the gym scene like? I mean, besides with Louie, I mean, in Columbus, Ohio back then, were you training at another gym at this point or were you still training with Louie?
Yeah, I was still training with Louie. Like I was still doing powerlifting. I wound up getting 2 elites in powerlifting.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I had a 740 squat and a 700 deadlift and a 440 bench. My bench was my weakest lift, But even still, even with an elite in the 98s and the 220s, I was always the weakest guy there because he had so many, you know, super talented powerlifters. But mm-hmm. I didn't care at all. I mean, I just loved being there, and it made me stronger.
Yeah.
I was doing powerlifting on the off season kind of thing. And the gym scene in Columbus, that's a good question, because we didn't have our first commercial gym until 1985. And that's when the Lorimers opened up a Gold's Gym out on the east part of Columbus.
And oh, really?
That was the very first commercial gym. And everything else was done like at the OSHA Weightlifting Club or the downtown YMCA. And that was it. I tell these guys today, I said, you guys, you got the choice of like 20 different gyms. It didn't used to be like that, man. It used to be like that, you know. So, but, you know, since Ohio in general has always been ground zero for strength sports. I mean, you had Larry Pacifico over in Dayton and the Black Health World up in Cleveland, John Black and Jack Sedaris and John Florio and those guys. And I think Bill Kazmaier, wasn't he? He was Ohio too, I think.
Was he? Okay.
I think he was. I might be wrong on that. But so, you know, it was just – and then Lorimer and Schwarzenegger starting things in the 70s here with bodybuilding. Yeah. It's just you can't ask for a better place to be for all that kind of stuff. It was just all happening.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, well, those are really the – the golden days, huh?
Yeah. And then, you know, in the 90s, there were great guys starting to come up. Guys like John Meadows. I mean, they don't come any smarter or better than John. And I was really fortunate to get to know him, you know, well over 20 years ago and watch his growth as both a bodybuilder, an academic individual, and just character-wise, he's probably one of the finest people I've ever known.
Wow, that's great. Now, how old was John when you met him?
You know what? He was just a bopper, I think. Maybe mm-hmm. 18 or 17, 18, 19. He knew he wanted to do bodybuilding when he was like in his early teenage years, like 15 and 16. And he was from Washington Courthouse and south of Columbus, and then comes to Columbus. And I kind of remember him when he was real young, and I was still down at Louis, but at least I think I do. But you know, then he just started making a name for himself, and you know, and getting to where he is today.
Mm-hmm.
And then today you got Dave Tate with Elite FTS out there in London, and I mean, just all kinds of great things seem to happen right here in Central Ohio.
Yeah, it's always seemed like a real hotbed of bodybuilding, you know, from when I used to go to the show, the Olympia, in the late 70s. And then, you know, you had Louis there, and then remember Mike Francois, he came out of Columbus, right?
Yeah. In fact, I met him 2 weeks after he won the Mr. Ohio contest. He walked into our gym, and I looked at this guy, and I thought, oh my God, this is, you know, this is real serious talent, you know. And
yeah,
I went up to him, and I said, hey, congratulations on winning and everything. I said, let me ask you something. Have you thought about, you know, setting your sights on a national championship? And he said, well, no. And I said, well, you need to start training for the nationals. And so then he and I hooked up, and I started training him and put together a team of people to get him to the national championship. And finally on October the 15th, 1993, out in Santa Monica,
mm-hmm.
Civic Auditorium, you know, in their own backyard, he takes it, you know.
Yeah.
Telling you, John, it doesn't get not a sweeter, better victory ever than that.
Wow. Wow. And that's awesome.
I was doing this training in the gym, and then we had a couple of guys that were doing his posing. Chris Aceto was handling his the last couple of weeks in his diet throughout the whole thing.
Right.
You know, so we had a team, and I learned that from Jim Lorimer, because Lorimer would put a team together to get something done. And I thought, you know, we're going to put a team together for this guy. And I trained him like a power lifter. I trained him the way that I got bigger and stronger. We put it back on that. You know, he had legs from, you know, he had legs from Mars to begin with. But in 2.5-3 years, we built it back on him. And when he turned around to hit a back double bicep shot with those hamstrings and calves, it was like, it's over. It's done.
Yeah, yeah. So did you introduce him to Louis Simmons?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that was the first time I ever heard of Louis when I was reading Mike's articles and Mike was talking about him.
Right. Yeah, I kind of paved the way for him. I said, Lou, you know, be a little flexible here. You know, this is serious talent. And, you know, and he was great. Lou was great. And Mike was over there for a while. I can't remember exactly how long, but maybe 4 or 5 months, something like that. Maybe 6, I'm not sure. But, you know, Lou did work with him, but I'm not sure why he left. Maybe he was – the thing with Louis is he'll try to push you so hard to become a power lifter. And yeah. I don't think that was Mike's cup of tea at all. So
right. But Mike was super strong, right? Wasn't he like squatting 700 and deadlifting 800?
Do you remember Ed Connors? He used to run –
Yeah, them out sure.
And this was like in the 80s – sorry, in the 90s, 80s and 90s. And I got him on the phone one time and I said, Ed, I got this guy in Columbus. You're not going to believe this guy. I mean, he's a bodybuilder and he's doing 705 for 6, 7, 8 reps with just a belt on. And he's got legs from, you know, God knows what creature, you know, on planet Earth and all this kind of stuff. And Ed's like, yeah. Okay. That sounds good. And I get him on the phone again and I'd say, Ed, I'm not kidding. This guy, you know, yeah. That's all real good. And I thought, okay. Here's what we're going to do. So took a camera. We didn't have video back then. I took a film of Mike squatting. I think he had 715 on the bar for like 8 reps.
Wow.
Filmed him, his leg curls. He was all tanned up and everything. Short shorts to see his hamstrings.
Mm-hmm.
Whole leg workout. The whole thing. Got it developed. Put it in an envelope. Sent it out there. About 5 days later, I get this call. He goes, Ed Connor goes, when can you guys get out here? Like that.
Yeah, like right.
That. And we did. We went out there and, you know, went into Gold's Gym and trained. And, you know, Ed was supremely interested in him then, you know, for bodybuilding. Yeah. You know, so, but he was a freak. I mean, kind of like a Dexter Jackson. He would react differently than everybody else. He didn't have any, he didn't have any ebb and flows. He just kept going. He was a linear equation, you know, going at about a 45 degree angle. He didn't have setbacks and he just kept growing. And I had to change my training, his training program around that. And to realize that he just kept moving forward. So he was a biochemical phenomenon and the metabolic phenomenon. I mean, it's just, I never had seen anything like him before. He was just completely remarkable in every way.
Yeah. Yeah. Mike's another one that people forget how great he really was. I mean, like you said, those legs were so freaky. I remember seeing that myself and man, he was just so thick. You could tell that was a physique that lifted really heavy, you know?
Yeah. He took to it really well. He took to the heavyweights great, and you know, kind of it just with that genetic talent of his, it just, you know, it was just like throwing a match into a fireworks factory, you know.
So Jimmy, yeah. you did the Mr. USA then the next year, which was 81. Was that your last one? Was that your last national show?
That was my last national show.
Yep. Okay. And you got third place in the light heavyweights there. So what was the reason that you decided that was going to be your last one? Were you just kind of losing interest in it or?
Well, I actually thought that I was going to continue to compete and, you know, I was still down at Louis, still lifting heavy. And, I made the classic mistake of thinking, you know what, I'm going to give myself a year off from competition and I'm going to keep powerlifting and keep getting stronger. I'd gotten my, elite in the, 98s. And I felt like I was getting bigger and I thought I'm going to wait a year and then I'll get back on stage. That was a big mistake. And I tell guys today, don't ever tell yourself you're going to take a year off to get bigger. And because you're screwing up if you're doing this, stay in the battle and stay on stage and you will get bigger anyhow, but don't get away from that competition and, you know, keep it going that way.
Right.
So then one thing led to another. I, you know, I'm not exactly sure why I didn't go back into it. I had kind of fallen out of favor with the AAU and with amateur bodybuilding at that time. And I was, you know, I think that entered into part of it as well. I was the only national level bodybuilder that had an AAU national judges card. The only one in America at that time. And of course that allowed me to go in and judge any competition anywhere, which I enjoyed doing, you know, but being a competitor, I didn't like the politics of some of the things that I saw. And the mistake was I opened my mouth about it. That probably, well, there's no question that wasn't a smart thing to do.
Yeah. So how long were you judging, Jim? When did you start doing that?
I got my AAU judges card, I think in like 78 or 79. So then I'd gone to Las Vegas in 81, and went out there and judged the Mr. America out there. Roy Callender won that year and, or did very well in the 98s. And so that's right. That was the first big show that I judged, but I judged a number of other shows before that too.
So what were you doing for a living, Jim, when you got out of OSU, Ohio State?
Well, I was working part-time for my family's business. They had a printing business. I was kind of like a starving artist type of thing. You know, I was just so committed to bodybuilding, that type of thing. And didn't really have much money or anything like that. And just kind of living the bohemian lifestyle. And did that for quite a while too, you know. And then about 12, 13 years ago, I was having shoulder issues. I was still lifting heavy, even in my 50s. But my shoulder started giving me problems because from squats and bench pressing, because the connective tissue was no longer as elastic as it could be.
Okay.
And kind of stumbled onto the kinetic idea, and the whole band bill thing gave birth.
And what's that? What's that all about?
Well, the company I have now, which is called Band Bell, and it's the earthquake bar. The bamboo, it started out originally as the bamboo bar, and then the earthquake bar, and now it's developed into a whole series of bars that I make. I probably make about 10 or 11 different bars, and they're all kinetic bars of one form or another, and none of them are steel. You don't know about this? You don't know about my company?
No, I didn't know about that.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, you'll have to look it up when we get off.
So what's the name of the company you get to?
Bandbell, B-A-N-D-B-E-L-L.
Okay. Bandbell. Okay. I'll check that out.
Go to bandbell.com. You'll see everything there. And it's a whole new thing, John. And you'll like it too. Let me know. I'll send you a bar.
Really?
You'll dig the hell out of it. It'll do great things for you. You'll see.
Okay. Great. Yeah, I'm looking it up right now.
Yeah, so I do Bandbell now. I mean, I manufacture bars and I sell them all over the world, and it's just a great thing. I love what I do. I've met so many more great people, and it feels good to do things for other people to help them, and that's what this whole concept does. It fixes shoulders. It strengthens joints. It bulletproofs joints. That's a term I like to use a lot. But it really does do that. It works really, really well.
Plus, you're doing what you love too. You know, you've been in this game your whole life, and now you're doing what you love to do.
Absolutely, I'm so fortunate, and I'm so grateful to be able to do this at this point in my life. So,
yeah, that's awesome.
Very grateful.
That's great. I didn't even know about that. I think I might have heard that you were involved with something like that, but I didn't know the name of it, and so I didn't know what kind of bar it was or anything.
Yeah, it's divided up into two different groups. One is the high kinetic bars, which are the bamboo bars, and the other group are what I call the low kinetic bars, and those are the Rhinoflex bars. So if you look at it, you'll figure it out. You'll see how it works. But a lot of the top powerlifters, like Louis had these bars down at West Side of Barbell for years now. He's a very big proponent of it. And guys like Donnie Thompson, and I'd say almost every NFL football team has got it in their training facilities. And
really? Wow.
Oh yeah. NBA, even National Hockey League was buying bars. And I thought, what are these guys buying bars for? But, you know, I'm like, and finally, last of the party was Major League Baseball. And if that would be the sport that would use the bar or get more use out of it and benefit out of it more than anybody. But they, it's kind of a good old boys system, and it took them a while to come on board with it. But I've been selling a lot of bars to them in their training camps, both in their winter training camps and in the cities where they're based in. So,
so it's basically designed for the joints to relieve the pressure on the joints when you're lifting.
Well, what it does is it strengthens the stabilizing muscles around the joints, like in the shoulders, and to a lesser degree in the hips and knees.
Okay.
So it when the stabilizers get really, really strong, then the joint becomes a more perfect mechanically functioning system.
Wow.
And stays very, very solid and steady in there. And then all stabilizers want to interact with the major primary movers. And they can't, that won't happen unless the stabilizers get strong. So the band bell powers up those stabilizers, really gets them very, very strong, thickens the connective tissue there, tendons, ligaments, that type of thing, and makes the joint a much more beefy, solid system.
Yeah.
And then the Rhinoflex bar basically is a non-steel barbell. So you can load plates on it like a regular steel barbell, only it flexes slightly, and it causes stabilizer activation. So you can squat, bench press, deadlift, overhead pressing, whatever you want to do, it'll work just like a barbell, but you don't get the downside. You don't get this, the wear and tear on the shoulders like you do on a steel bar.
Wow, that's awesome. That's great. So you had this problem with yourself, and then you designed this company out of that. So that's really cool.
Yep, that's the way it rolled.
Yeah, well, that's great. I can't wait to try it. I'm looking forward to that. So Jim, looking back on your bodybuilding career, do you have any good memories about like any contests that really stuck out as far as you know, ones that were really meaningful to you?
Yeah, I tell you, they were all great. I mean, I loved all of it. I was just so, you know, in love with competition and the training aspect. And I remember when I was a kid, I was a little kid. A real little kid. I mean, when I graduated from high school, I weighed 118 pounds. So I was always small. And, you know, the neighborhood I grew up in, there were a lot of kids. We played baseball, basketball, football, and that kind of stuff. And I just always remember thinking, if I ever found one thing, just one thing I could do well, I was really going to have at it. And that stuck with me. That never left me. And so when I finally found weightlifting, I was an okay gymnast. I mean, I was all right. I did good. I was good enough to be on the team and to get a scholarship. But when I started lifting weights, I knew right then and there that this is what I was made to do. And I put a brick on the accelerator, and I did not look back. I just let it rip. And I thought, this is what I was meant to do, and I'm gonna do it as hard as I can, you know, and all that type of stuff. And I loved the whole thing. And look who I got. Look who I was so fortunate to have around me in this town. I mean, guys like Louis Simmons and Lormer and, you know, Arnold and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, you can't write a better story, you know?
right. You're meant to do it, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I think the Mr. Ohio, when I won the Mr. Ohio up in the northern part of Ohio, up in the Cleveland area, the guy that was was considered the best bodybuilder in the state. He was a dentist. His name was Ron. I'm not sure about his last. Can't remember Freeman. I think is what it was. But anyhow, he had everybody was there to see him come win the Mr. Ohio. And so this guy from Columbus comes up there, you know, that nobody really knew, and I beat him. I mean, I knew I was better than him, you know. And they handed me the trophy, which was this gorgeous 3-foot-high, beautiful walnut trophy with gold chrome on it and all this kind of stuff. It was just the prettiest trophy I'd ever seen in my life. And they announced me as the winner, and it started getting kind of ugly. booing and all this kind of stuff, and they handed me the trophy, and people were pissed. I mean, you know, and there was this rumbling, this low rumble to the audience there. And I said to my girlfriend, I said, I think we better get out of here while we can.
Right.
And believe me, I was looking over my shoulder.
Jeez, unbelievable.
I said, let's just go straight to the car and get the hell out. You know, I mean, I thought, okay, that's kind of fun, you know.
Right.
But that was a good one. But then the Mr. America in 1979, 1978, Bill Pearl posed in Cincinnati at the Mr. America there. He comes out on stage.
Yeah, tell me about that.
And, oh, God. I mean, it was he would have won that day.
Wow.
He was like in his 40s or something like that, and he comes out and he just floored the whole place. They were like, what? This guy, he looked like this? Unbelievable.
No shit.
That was a great, great moment, you know. And then 1979, Chris Dickerson guest posed in Atlanta for the Mr. America, and he looked phenomenal. And that was he won the Olympia in 81. So that was he was still in the strong part of his career right then and there. And he was just phenomenal when he got out there. And, you know, just the whole thing was great, you know.
Yeah, well, you got to do it during the golden era, you know, when the sport was really great. You could see all the great bodybuilders of all history, you know.
Yep. It was pretty cool, man, I'll tell you.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, Jim, it was great talking to you about your career. Like I said, I grew up reading about you in the magazines, and I could tell you always had a real powerful, great physique. So it was great meeting you and great talking to you about this. And best of luck with your new business, Bandbell, and I'll be checking that out myself. But thanks for joining us on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast.
My pleasure, John. I really, really appreciate it.
All right. Take care, Jim.
All right, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thank you to our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. And thanks to Old School Labs for sending me out to the Olympia this year. I had a great time. And thanks to Jim Seitzer for a great interview. And I also want to mention before we go, my sister Kim, my younger sister Kim, celebrating her 50th birthday today. I can't believe my younger sister is the big 5-0. So happy birthday, Kim. And that is it for the podcast this week. Hope you guys have a great week, and we will see you next week on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Take care.